Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's good to be back here in the studio with you at OC Talk Radio. I'd like to, I'm honored to say our special guest today is David Meltzer, the co-founder and CEO of Sports One Marketing and S1 Media House. Dave has quite a fascinating story of experiencing extreme highs and lows in his life and gone from extreme accomplishment to, I guess, you know, I don't like to use the word failure, but difficult, trying times. And he's come out of it with great advice and great thinking on what we can do to move to our next chapter. Now, before we begin, I'd like to talk about some of Dave's accomplishments, which are quite impressive, and they include being a two-time number one best-selling author and has been named a top 10 keynote speaker by Forbes and Entrepreneur. Marshall Goldsmith has recognized Dave as a top 100 business coach, and Dave is currently an advisory board member to over 45 companies and charities. Dave, don't know how you do it. I work with one and I do 20 hours a week. And Dave is also the executive producer and host to Entrepreneurs' original show, Elevator Pitch, and he is the host of the top 5 business podcast titled Playbook. Dave was awarded the Ellis Island Medal of Honor and Variety Magazine Sports Humanitarian of the Year, which we'll talk a lot about. So that's a pretty impressive intro. And with that, I'd like to get to talk to the CEO who travels the world helping people. Dave, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thanks so much, Charlie. I would joke around and say when my mom listens to that intro, her line is, well, at least my other son's a doctor.
Yeah, that is so true, and in some cultures that truly is it. It's the title is everything, and doctor is doctor or attorney. Those are your two. You know, Dave. You know what I'd like to do. I did a bit of reading through your books and listened to a few podcasts and got a feeling for who you are. And I was really interested in your past, in your earlier childhood. And I don't know what age. I assume it goes into adolescence. And I'd like to begin the show by digging a bit into your fascinating past, as we can chat about your impressive lists of what I'm calling lessons learned the hard way in your life. So talk to me about how you started and what were the drivers of you starting your very fascinating career.
Well, it's interesting because my mom was a single mom since I was 5 years old with 6 kids in a place called Akron, Ohio. I'm the only non-basketball player out of there. LeBron James and Steph Curry were both born in the same hospital as I. But my mom, interesting enough, always said that there's miracles in every lesson. And I think kind of manifested my life because I really have been given some great lessons. And they started with the just perspective of I wanted to be rich. And I wanted to be rich because I did have a single mom who sacrificed so much for me and my 5 siblings, 4 boys and a girl, and I was always happy. We had a 2-bedroom apartment, and I was extremely happy as a child, except for when I caught my mom crying because we didn't have enough money for food, a car breaking down, or a dishwasher, or summer camp. And somewhere in my mind, from a very young age, I decided that I could buy happiness, and that the only time I wasn't happy or my mom wasn't happy was when it was a money-related issue. So I created and attached my happiness to an outcome of being rich, and didn't want to be rich for me, though. I wanted to be rich to buy my mom a house and a car, and I worked really, really hard to buy my mom a house and a car. Originally, I thought I'd be a football player, and at 5'7" and 147 pounds, it was a miracle that I got a scholarship to college to play football.
Oh, did you really? No kidding.
Yeah. I had one gift. I had one gift that was created because I had a big mouth. And that was, I could run scared faster than anyone could.
That's what I say. You must have had wheels. You know, yeah, exactly. If you're that size, then you've got to be fast.
Yeah. So, you know, after talking trash to my siblings for the years in a two-bedroom apartment, when they put me out on a football field, wow, it felt like so much room. It was really difficult to get a hand on me. And but I did learn very quickly when Christian Okoye ran me over my freshman year that I didn't think a football career was in my future. And as we discussed earlier, my mom's philosophy, who I adore, was always, you know, doctor, lawyer, or failure. So I decided that if I wasn't going to be a professional football player, that I'd go to med school. I visited my oldest brother in the hospital, and you know, I told him, I met him there. I said, "Oh my gosh, I hate hospitals." And he almost fell over. He goes, "David, you got to be kidding. You're pre-med. God knows you're not going to be a football player. What do you mean you hate hospitals?" And I said, "Well, I don't want to be a hospital doctor." I was 18 years old. I didn't know what I was talking about, but I said, "I want to be a sports doctor or a pediatrician. I don't want to be in the hospital." And he gave me my first lesson, my first great piece of advice. He said, "David, you need to be more interested than interesting." And I know that's a simple lesson that most people don't think about, but for me, that was a very, very important lesson to learn, and I still follow it every day. And as my career developed, and people come up to me still today and say, "Mr. Meltzer, I want to be just like you. I want to be a sports agent, or, you know, I want to run a global marketing company, or have my own TV show or my own podcast." I like to tell them, look, be more interested than interesting, because most of the young people that want to be or dream of being things, they haven't done the work. They haven't done the research, the due diligence to understand what skills are involved, what knowledge is needed, and the passion and purpose that comes with that, let alone the profitability that's necessary in order to be successful at it. And I immediately shifted gears in following my mom's advice. So I decided if I couldn't be a doctor, I'd be a lawyer. And I studied really hard. And in order to be rich, I had two job offers when I graduated law school. One was to be an oil and gas litigator, which, if anyone knows about oil and gas, that is a high-paying, very sleazy, scarce industry. But I absolutely was going to be a rich lawyer. And the other one was to get a job in the internet. I had been offered a job to sell legal research online for the world's largest legal publisher. And I went to my mother to ask her what I should do. And lesson number two came about. My mom told me immediately that I should be a real lawyer. In fact, she expounded upon that and said, "You know, the internet, you can't take this internet job because the internet's going to be a fad."
that's what everybody thought at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of things today. But it was really interesting because it was the first time I realized that just because somebody loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. And
that is a great insight.
And, you know, as having a son that plays baseball, that, you know, if your son who's a catcher is asking you advice on how to hit a slider, you may not be the best person to teach him. You may not have that situational knowledge. And it can actually create resentment between father and son or mother and son if we care about our children and we love them, but, you know, we ask the wrong people for advice and they give us bad advice.
Oh,
really,
yeah.
Their relationship.
I quit coaching my son at 12 years old. I realized at 12, and we had very successful teams. I have 7 players that played for me that are in the big leagues right now. And
wow.
I know that's more than colleges. But I realized I taught him everything I knew, so I put him with an ex who was a minor leaguer, but put him with a catcher who's a extremely great coach. But I knew I had to step out of the way, and I quit coaching him baseball. You know, that was it. It was done.
Yeah. And you get it. And I see so many young people today that ask advice of the people who love them. And, you know, I was asking a second grade teacher for advice on technology. And although my mom loves me more than any mother can love a son, probably too much, you know, she was giving me bad advice. Thank goodness I didn't take it, because within 9 months out of law school, I was a millionaire, and I was able to buy my mom a house and a car, which was one of the highlights of my life. And I continued my career in technology and ended up on Silicon Valley raising millions of dollars for a wireless proxy server company called EveryPath, And then by the time I hit my early 30s, became CEO of the world's first smartphone, the world's first CE device, Windows CE.
So you were into tech before you were into sports marketing and sports agency.
Yes, and that's a really important point, because although I was a technology executive and, you know, had great experience there, I had a passion for sports. So I was a customer of sports, and people always ask me, what experience did you have? Well, from a very young age, I was executive of, you know, my company that I worked for sold for $3.4 billion in 1995. So I worked for very large, successful companies. And that was when $1 billion was a lot of money, though, 95. And
it's Dave, it's still a lot of money.
Yeah, that lottery proved that, didn't it? but I literally, it was very important because, being able to understand being a customer, I learned sports, endorsements, sponsorship, appearances, speaking engagements, hospitality, advertising, from the customer's point of view. So when I retired in my 30s and met Lee Steinberg, the most notable sports agent in the world,
right?
He loved my technology background. He saw the future in sports and technology, but he also saw something unique, that I had a customer's perspective of his business. Even though I had a law degree, even though, you know, I did have a great background and passion for sports, what he really understood and I think was attracted to, because he hired me within 48 hours of meeting him to be an executive with the firm, and then within 6 months I was the CEO, he hired me because I had a completely different perspective of how to treat the customer, because I had spent the last 12 years of my career being a customer.
Well, as a sports dad, I want to know, how do you, in sports, how do you treat that customer differently than, say, the average agent or other competition might, that put you ahead of the game?
You know, it was the shift of value and understanding abundance. Most people in the sports agency world are extremely scarce. They live in two different worlds, the world of not enough. And so they're consistently projecting fear and ego and time into, as your son goes through arbitration and negotiation next year into his first real big contract, you'll see an energy of scarcity, of a world of either not enough or just enough. When we went into things, and that's Lee who taught me how, we went in with the philosophy of more than enough, that we understood that our job was to create value and to provide enough of everything for everyone. So it wasn't a quid pro quo, trading this point for this point. It was, how do we work with the cap? How do we work with different creative ways of marketing, advertising, sponsorship, endorsement? How do we work with charity in order to figure out creating enough value for everyone in the deal? And that's why our players, you know, we got 8 first picks in the draft in a row. That's why we had the largest baseball agency that sold for $90 million to Asante. Because we shifted the paradigm of value, we were more concerned about how much value we could bring, not how much we could get.
That's creating win-win situations.
Absolutely. And it takes a lot more work.
It does. But the results are so much more long-lasting and so much more effective.
Absolutely. We also required every one of our clients to create a charity or have a cause.
Oh, really?
Certain portion. Every one of our clients was required. And it really wasn't qualified, because if a client wasn't willing to do that, we knew in the long run they wouldn't be a good client to us. What we also knew is that if they got involved in the community and they gave back to the community, that it made our negotiations so much easier, that it made the team want to keep them. It made a great clubhouse player. The community would rally behind that player. He would sell more tickets, more merchandise. He would be more difficult to trade because the community sentiment that he was a part of the community giving back. And that was one of our secret sauces that still today, Warren Moon, my business partner in our marketing company, we live by today, that everything we do has a charitable purpose or cause tied to it, or we won't get involved.
Well, that is great. You know, our whole family is very charity and philanthropy oriented, and my son has, we are part of a nonprofit that's called Wells of Life, and we dig water wells in rural Uganda, and we've provided water for over 400,000 people, saving the lives of probably 40,000 children under five. And, you know, he's now, you know, to a lot of people, to most people, he makes a giant salary, but he makes that rookie salary of $550, right? But he has still given well over six figures to charity. He gives a large proportion of his income to charity because, as a family, he's been raised that way. But he really believes it, and he really believes in wells of life and supplying water to these people who are drinking dirty, mucky water. And he wants to build some baseball fields in Haiti, and he wants to do some other things locally. So he's, you know, we have a donor advised fund, and we're, you know, both our, as a whole family, we put in together in it, and we decide how we're going to distribute it.
That's beautiful. And we do work in Kenya with Unstoppable Foundation, which I'm the chairman of, and have the same five pillars, you know, with the Me to We and other organizations throughout Africa. So I applaud you, and especially you, because your son, apples don't fall far from the tree. And it's important for people to realize that you know, our
Thank
children,
you.
We
That's
can't
kind
tell
of
them,
you.
We can't tell them what to do, right? But we can show them what we do and inspire them by our actions. And I think more parents out there have to realize that kids may not listen to you, but they watch you. And, you know, all of the different things that you've done is why your son is, you know, such a passionate, purposeful success. And I think we'll have just a great career in karma as he goes forward. But back to my great story.
Yeah, tell me, let's get back to your story.
That's all the rosy side of it. What happened in my 30s as I got the job with Lee Steinberg is my ego got in my way.
Now, people need to know that not everybody may know Lee Steinberg. Mm-hmm. This was the largest sports agency in the world, and there was even a movie made about it called Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise. So we are talking the biggest of the big time.
The biggest of the big time, and I was the chief executive officer
of that firm. Right.
And my ego represented that. I had lost the humility that my mom taught me, the great gratitude and the accountability. I started surrounding myself with the wrong people and the wrong ideas, and just started buying things to try to make me happy. I had everything I ever dreamed of. I had beautiful wife, three gorgeous daughters, beautiful home, Ferrari, Porsche, anything you could imagine I could buy that I wanted. But moreover, I ended up losing everything.
Can I ask you, before you're talking about losing it, while you had it, you wanted to be rich, not just have a lot of money, you wanted to be rich, you got rich.
Buy my mom a house and a car, yep.
So did, after that occurred, did you did you have contentment and personal fulfillment as a man as a result of that?
I did not. You know, that's what was interesting. You know, I remember when I built my home, I built a huge home in Rancho Santa Fe, and the day that it was finished with, you know, four cars and a boat and a motorhome and, you know, whatever else I had. Yeah, I remember looking at the ceiling going, wow, for the first time in my life, I'm not happy.
No kidding. Why do you think that was? That's an interesting. For the first time, I'm not happy because I have everything, and I now no longer have goals or.
Yeah. I attach my happiness to an outcome, and what I learned was, you know, it's more important to manifest the journey. I created this definition of happiness that I started living by, as I took stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. I decided that happiness no longer would be an outcome. It wasn't going to be attached to whether I could play football or graduate law school or get married or buy a house or a car or a boat or a plane. It was simply going to be every day I was going to enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit pursuit of my potential. And that potential was going to be a service that I woke up every morning with a prayer that I wanted God to put 10 people in front of me that I could help, and start my day there and provide value. You know, I just wanted to be of service and of value to others, and trust the universe that everything that I wanted would come to me rapidly and accurately, not as a trade, but as a trust. And there's a big difference.
You use that term a lot, I've noticed. As I was listening to some of your podcasts, you use the term trusting the universe. Do you want to elaborate that on to us?
Yeah. trust is faith to me, and I think people get confused about faith, and they put faith in different things. It's not necessarily just putting faith in what you believe in. That's good. People put faith in what they don't want, and that faith, that trust that they put in what they don't want, attracts more of what they don't want, and then they're surprised, why do I keep getting what I don't want, when they're putting faith in the ego, into fear and anxiety and shortage and void and obstacles and resistance, where I, to trust the universe, provide value, and I live my life of service to be of value to others. And it takes a surrender that there's things bigger than me, and that if I play my part as one to help others, that everything will come my way as well. And like I said, it's trust, not trade. And
do you know how powerful that is, what you just said, that I have never, ever, you know, you get to a point, you know, in your age, you know, you think, you know, I've heard maybe not the exact words of everything, but I've heard a lot of stuff. I have never heard you to talk about faith in things that we don't accomplish and that we can't accomplish. And what I've never heard it as faith, but what that is a misguided trust in ourselves, our ability, and in the universe, in which we feel like we are destined to fail.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this, and you're saying, and so that is faith, that we have faith that we are destined to fail, and it's going to come true if we think that.
Yeah, and I see it invariably consciously, subconsciously, and where I've been spending a lot of my time recently is studying even the unconscious competencies that people have, the genetic dispositions, the character traits, the personality traits, the genetics, and also the energetic side of things, what people naturally attract to themselves relationship-wise, void, shortage, obstacles, all those different things. And when I tell and compliment you for your son's success, which is your success, which as a father, I have an 8-year-old son and 3 teenage daughters, you know, my soul is directly attached to that legacy, right? What I only can give them is my name. And that name is one that I want them to carry on, one that people will say, you know, to be kind to your future self, that, you know, here's a giving, generous, meaningful person. You know, in fact, you know, when I lost everything, the hardest part about losing everything was that, you know, it was about 2 years into my journey of redemption, right? It was, going bankrupt doesn't just happen overnight when you have over $100 million. It takes a while.
Right.
And so imagine sitting there, and now you're doing the right things. You're putting faith in the right things. You're living your right life the right way. And you wake up in the morning, and number one, you have to go to work and tell, you know, Lee Steinberg and Warren Moon, who you office sits between, that they're Midas CEO, their golden boy, this child that they allowed and gave the steering wheel to the most prestigious sports agency in the world, was bankrupt. But moreover, and the worst thing, most humbling thing I've ever had to do, and the best lesson that has ever been given to me, was that I had to walk over to my mom's house. And if you recall, the reason I wanted to be rich originally was to buy my mom a house and a car. And I had to go tell my mom that I was bankrupt.
And that she was going to lose her house?
Yeah, that she was going to have to leave.
Oh, my goodness.
Thing, I try not to choke up, but I looked at her and told her, and she said to me, it still chokes me up. She said, you know, that's okay. She goes, do you need any money? There was no, right there, like, it was unconditional love, right?
What a wonderful mother.
That's radical humility and selfless, unconditional love that taught me a lesson about pursuing my potential. And, you know, that keeps me inspired every day to be of service, to help others, and know that I'm trying to be my best. And it has changed my life. And for the last 10 years, I have been blessed beyond belief, not just in the receivership that I'm in, but things never happened to me. They don't even happen for me anymore. I live in a world of more than enough where things happen through me. I'm in receivership for others, and I'm blessed that the more that I sit in receivership and the more that I receive for others through me, the more that I'm in the flow, and there's more for me than I've ever dreamed of. And I'm able to empower others, to help others, and really impact. And I know you go through that bio, and it's humbling to listen to, but it's a matter of productivity and accessibility. It's a matter of perspective of helping other people, and it's a gift to be able to have the ability to provide for so many people, to empower so many people, to help them.
Well, you know what I want to do is I want to get into more of that, your present and even your future ideas, since we've covered your past. But we're going to take a quick break. It'll be about a 20-second break. Hang in, and we'll be right back. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you are listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am here with an exciting guest, David Meltzer, who is a popular speaker, author, CEO of a couple of businesses, just I could go on and on. But we had just talked about how Dave has had attained his goal and was CEO of the largest sports agency in the world, went bankrupt, had to go through some terribly difficult times. But now you have not only recovered, but it sounds like you possibly have even exceeded where you were in the past. What was that path like, Dave?
You know, it still is, right? It's that journey that I'm on. It's one of being of service, and yes, I live a purposeful, passionate, profitable life. And I think the one thing that makes me different, the second book that I wrote was called Compassionate Capitalism, is that I'm actually, although, you know, people see me as a humanitarian or philanthropist like you, I'm a pretty hardcore capitalist. I believe in making money first. I believe in making money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. And money to me has an energy of options, and not just options for me, but options for others. And I say that we live at this vibration, at this pragmatic world, and money gives us options, and that I can't give what I don't have. And I first learned that with forgiveness. I spent a long time focusing in on forgiving myself and understanding that I couldn't forgive others until I forgave myself. And I became a very forgiving person because it made my past, like gratitude, unbelievable, my present better, my future even brighter. And when I learned about money and I got rid of the worthiness issues that I had with receiving and realized that everything that I would receive would help other people, it opened up a world of abundance and a world of receivership. And I've been living on that path for the last decade. And more, I am still just in awe of how much, you know, I look at the lottery and I laugh because I love the fact that in order to get people into the perspective of possibility and probability, they have to spend $2 to dream about what they would do with $1.6 billion. They have to spend $2 to have a possibility of being a billionaire. And I say to everyone out there, you already have it. Right? It's already a possibility. You just have to dream about it. Know your what, know your why, and then understand the how. And you have a better statistical success of accessing $1.6 billion into your life than buying a $2 ticket. And it doesn't cost you anything.
You said a really important word that's you're the only other person that's ever really articulated it this way of money and options. I used to, when I was a high school coach, before my son went to the high school, because we weren't going to have daddy ball, you know, where he's a starting freshman and the dad on the coaching staff. I retired, right. but I was on the coaching staff of a high school. And I used to talk to players about grades, and they say, why do I need grades? And I said, you know, grades are a currency. They're like money. Money doesn't buy you things. You think money buys you a car or a house. That's not what money buys you. Money buys you what kind of car, what kind of house. You know, if you have C or D grades, you're going to be driving a Civic. If you have A grades and you're going to be going to the and you're not going to be going to the college that you want to go to, if you have A grades, you can go to any university you want to. You're a talented athlete, and it gives you options. And so that is what that's what I really believe about money. The value of money is the options that it gives you, not just that I can go out and buy some toy that I happen to need, but I or want probably don't need. But that toy that I want, but I have options of what kind of toys. And I love that concept of options. And I think if people understood money and options, not money and the things themselves, it will it puts money in a whole new perspective.
Right. And it's the perspective of a journey. And I absolutely believe in that. And I think that most people do not have a problem with giving. My thing to help people is understanding receiving and receivership. You know, most people don't understand, and that's where I had my problems is, you know, imagine having a mother who worked two jobs, you know, was a teacher, then came home and filled up the turnstiles at 7-Elevens with greeting cards and packed your dinner in a lunch bag. And, you know, within 15 years of that date, you know, she was making $17,000 a year and I was making $17 million, right? Imagine what energy and worthiness. And I felt dirty. I felt as, like, how could I be, you know, just lucky or worthy of so much when so many people had so little? And, you know, that energy was not healthy. And it's important for people to understand receivership and to love themselves so that they can give to others. People don't have a problem with giving. It's the most natural truth that exists within us. The best thing about giving is my favorite thing is how the body reacts to giving. Think about this. When you give, serotonin is released in your brain and it makes you happy. The person who gets what you give, serotonin is released in their brain and makes them happy. But the most remarkable thing about giving is all those people who witness it, whether they witness it in person, on the radio, on TV, or a movie, or on the internet, every single person that witnesses giving, serotonin is released in their brain, and it creates happiness.
And there's actually, it's sort of a symbiotic relationship going on that doesn't require thank you, doesn't require anything. It's just, it's happening chemically in our brain and spiritually between us in the world.
Absolutely. And what a gift it is. And if we all can not only learn to give, but most importantly, learn to receive. And the best way to learn how to receive is when you realize that you can't give what you don't have, one. And two, you don't know what you have until you've given it away.
Does receiving require loving yourself?
Absolutely. Right? Because you're worthy. And I think love, you can't give love unless you love yourself. And, you know, that's loving yourself with all your faults, all your capacities that need to improve, what I call you are potential. So if we're all potential, that means we're not quite there yet. Right?
Well, you know, even the big book that lots of people quotes, the Bible, you know, Jesus says the three most important things are love God, love other people, but then he has a clause that nobody pays attention to: love other people as yourself. So if you, you know, that rings to mind to me. If I'm not loving myself, I can't adequately love other people.
Correct, and it's not narcissistic. It's different than self-centered. It's a completely different philosophy. Loving yourself is, you know, being gracious, being kind, being forgiving, being
accepting who you are and your frailties.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, should you not throw the first stone, right? I love the people, you know, I tell people all the time, I had a very difficult relationship with my father, and it improved over the years. And, you know, I always tell everyone, you know, when I was, before, you know, 1 to 10, my dad was my hero. From 10 to 20, I hated my father. From 20 to 30, I started to understand him. And from 30 to 40, he was a friend. And from 40 to 50, he was truly an inspiration and a mentor to me. But the things I hated about my father through my teenage years and my 20s, I will honestly tell you, most people probably aren't brave enough to tell you, is everything I hated about my father was what I hated about myself.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, it makes perfect sense. It's like looking into a mirror. Carl Jung is very famous with saying, what you don't like in others is really what you don't like in yourself.
Absolutely.
So you've got one of the famous psychologists of the forever.
Yeah, I live by that. When things bother me, you know, it used to bother me so much when people would oversell me, back-end sell me, manipulate me, or even lie to me, especially in a business situation. And I started realizing that it upset me so much because that's what I didn't like about myself. And, you know, what I learned was I needed to, instead of being a manipulator, I was going to become a motivator. And, you know, it's a whole different philosophy. And I went from being a manipulator and making millions of dollars manipulating people. I was still a good person. I was an honest, but, you know, in business, I was doing what it took to make money. I was in a scarce mode. And once I learned to be a motivator, to be someone who appreciates everything, which means add value, appreciate everything, my life, I became a motivator, inspiration, and everything came my way, and still faster and better than ever. Everything comes to me for the benefit of others.
You know, as at 69 years old, I still I'm on this. You know, people say that the older you get, the less you know. I think that's bull. I think the older you get, the more stuff you know. But the less you know for sure. That's the one. I was a lot more sure at things at 60 than I am at 70. But so I still have a leadership coach. I mean, not a leadership, but a personal coach. And she said to me, and I don't even know if it was on the air. She was on our show. But she said, you have a choice. You can either be a victim or a creator. And I thought about that a bit. And I thought that was really insightful, is that you can fall prey to be a victim. It's everybody else's fault. Blame everybody else. Or you can be a creator, that you can create your way out of it. You can create a way into a new life that's a more beneficial and more helpful life to yourself. And I have since, you know, that's become a little mantra of mine, that am I being a victim or am I being a creator?
That's wonderful. Yeah, my mom used to say, don't live below the line in blame, shame, or justification. Right. She said, don't make it your excuse. Make it your story. Right. Make it your story. I don't want to hear how poor you are. I don't want to hear how the other kids have all these advantages. Make it your story. Quit whining. You're accountable. Make it your story. It's not going to be your excuse.
Well, we're getting close to winding up. But you know what I want to know is I want to know, for me personally. And so then our listeners get to find out, too. But I want to know your current, what would you call your sort of philosophical secrets to success? What is it that you know, what would be the top three or four things you think a person really needs to be mentally and emotionally and physically involved in order to make lots of money, say?
Yeah, so for me, there's four things. One is gratitude. I think you need to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Gratitude gives you perspective, right? It makes what you got to do into what you get to do. It shows blessings in everything. If you're not living a grateful life, you will never manifest what you desire. The second one is empathy. You need to forgive yourself so you can forgive others. If you're not empathetic, if you can't connect emotionally and forgive all of the imperfections in the world, you'll never pursue your potential and enjoy that pursuit. The third we just mentioned, which was accountability. You need to live above the line. There's only two things to ask yourself when things happen to you or for you or through you. It's number one, what did I do to attract this into my life? And what am I supposed to learn from it?
Yes.
And then finally, the key to success is what I call effective communication. There's a duality to communication. One is, how do we emotionally connect to others, inspire others? How do we realize that we are one? But more importantly than even connecting to others is making sure that we're connected to that which inspires us.
Oh, geez.
Whatever you want to call call that. It's a living inspiration. I don't care if you call it God, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
You need to live an inspired life. And if you live with gratitude, empathy, accountability, and effective communication, I promise you, you will manifest everything you desire rapidly and accurately and live a passionate, purposeful, as well as profitable life.
And if you can communicate love and forgiveness, and if you can communicate the above three, actually, of gratitude, empathy, and accountability, if you can communicate those, you can actually help transform other people's lives.
Oh, without a doubt. And you can, what I like to say, and you've done it in your career by the time you're 70, but you're a person who, you know, whether it was the boy coach or the high school coach or the teacher or, you know, the philanthropist that you are empowering others to empower others to be happy, right? You're not just affecting that single generation. You're creating millions of people are impacted by what you're doing because you're not just giving the fish, you're teaching people to fish. Most importantly, your own kids, but also your community and your country and even the world. You're empowering them to empower others to be happy.
That's my goal. Sounds like that's your goal in life.
It is absolutely my mission, and I certainly appreciate you giving me an opportunity to be on here, and I look forward to speaking to you or helping however I can.
Well, gosh, so I feel like our time has gone by in about 10 minutes that we've just barely gotten into it, but that's a sign of a good conversation. Thank you, David, so much for being on the show, and perhaps someday in a few months we could do a round two and we could pick another subject and move on with that, because I feel you have so much to offer our audience and quite frankly, so much to offer me personally, so it's kind of selfishly that I'm saying that.
Vice versa, it would be a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and to be sure to check us out on our website, thenextchapter.life, L-I-F-E. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
Channel stuff, you know, take him at his word here, you know. He's going to spread it out to others. He's going to...
Yeah, I'll send him a couple of documents about it. I'm not the fundraiser, so...
Yeah, but I'm just saying,
You're right. You're bang on. You're right. You're talking like Nick Jordan now.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
He opened the door and said, I want to enable others. I want to channel this. I don't want to just make money for me. I want to empower others. I want to, you know, come to me and I'll help other people. Show me 10 people today. Okay, so here's a cause I found, and maybe you can, not just money, maybe you can find other thoughts or other ideas.
Yeah, I sent, and by the way, I sent Lending Pro. I did a published podcast today, day late. We completely forget about it after these days. But I sent him a...
This guy will want it because he's a self-promoter. I mean, he still is a big self-promoter. And that's the other reason to have him on.
And I felt like asking him, I've seen his podcast, I felt like it's the same. Let me ask different questions that he doesn't ordinarily get.
When you went towards telling your youth and all, I remember he's been on three times, three different shows. Rick talked about just the business of sports, you know, the coaching. They really had a simpatico, more spiritual kind of conversation. Yours was more about how do you manifest what you want? How do you
every
get
day
what
living.
You want?
Yeah. I got to run, buddy.
Okay. Don't miss that opening. See if he's for real. He says, I'm willing to listen and help and be there for people. See if he can be there for this group.
Okay. Now, you know, I'm out. You got my out time.
So. Yeah, I forgot. What is it, the next 2 weeks?
Next 2 weeks.
Okay. All right. We'll see when you get back.
Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of OC Spotlight, where we take a look at the most amazing people and incredible organizations making an impact right here in our community. And boy, we got some good ones here in today. A full house with our public affairs director, Claudia Shambaugh. Hey, Claudia.
Hello, Mark.